And the chapter that I'm getting ready for is a chapter that's going to be on the, you know, they really. Well, I, the chapter that I'm getting ready to work on is a chapter on the conflict that arose in a church over whether to support the farm worker movement or not. And there was a tremendous amount of conflict, of course, here in the valley, more here than in most other places. Mm-hmm. And what I wanted to talk with you about was how you saw that as someone who was active with the union, mm-hmm. and had been living here in the valley as a farm worker. Had you been in the church or not?
Yes. Yes, I have. I'm Catholic, and I do not attend church very often, but my religion is Catholic, mm-hmm. and but I did see a conflict between the church and the union. Mm-hmm. After the union came out in full support, the church came out in full support of the church.
Mm-hmm. And then, of the organizing?
Yes. Yeah. The church was right there 100% behind us, especially the Catholic Church, mm-hmm. and then other religions too, mm-hmm. other churches. Like in 1973, when we had these big demonstrations and mm-hmm. people were arrested, all religious people were there.
Right. How about earlier, though, Jesse, like in 65 and 66, mm-hmm. when it was still pretty confined to Delano? Mm-hmm. How was it then from your point of view in terms of church support?
We did have the support from the church, but they were afraid to come out, you know, and saying it because... Mm-hmm. Well, they knew what was going to happen as soon as the growers or whoever supported the mm-hmm. church heard about it, what they were doing. It turned out the way they thought it would. But then after the Pope, you know, gave them permission to use all kinds of literature for the mm-hmm. on their churches, a leaflet was left on all the chairs out there, those, you know, those benches.
Where was that?
On the, here in Fresno and in other churches.
Mm-hmm. That was in the 70s?
Yes, mm-hmm. around the 70s. Mm-hmm. That's when they came out.
Was that after Caesar went to Rome and met with the Pope?
I think that was before.
Before?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think that was before. And we did get full support, and there... I think what happened is, like, farm workers don't have too much money, and when we go to church, we do put a little money in the basket, but not as much as the growers. Mm-hmm. So the growers, since they have a lot of money, they give a lot of money to the church, and they feel that they have an upper hand, or what, I don't know what I would call it, but like they are the ones that have the last word. Mm-hmm. So I feel that it was money that was being given to the church, and they felt that, you know, that since they gave so much money, they were the ones that owned the church. I guess that's how they felt. You know, a lot of people, when they have money, they feel that they own everything, mm-hmm. and it's not that way. But we still get support from the church. I still go out to church groups and talk to them about not only about farming but the struggle of the farm workers, mm-hmm. and they want to hear about it.
So there continues to be
yes.
an interest.
Yes.
In 65, where were you living then?
I lived in Parlier.
And were you active or did you go to a church in Parlier?
Yes. Yes, I went to a Catholic church there in Parlier.
And how long was it after the strike? Well, were you one of the early members of
yes.
of the union? So
yes.
you were a member already in 65?
Mm-hmm. That, on May the 1st of 1965, I became a member, mm-hmm. my husband and I. Mm-hmm.
What's your husband's name?
Arnold.
Arnold. And the priest there at that time, did you have a sense of how he felt about the strike when it began?
Yes, because... the priest there, there was a group of the city council and community people, and he invited me to the meetings. And there were growers too, and teachers, and of course many of those teachers were farmers. And I would come. I didn't feel like I free enough. Well, that's not the word. I wasn't confident enough to talk to them about the union.
Mm-hmm.
But I was there listening to what they were saying, and the priest did come out talking about the union, about the farm workers, about the need, you know, to help the farm workers. Mm-hmm. And of course, the farmers held back. They didn't say anything, but I knew they didn't agree with what we were talking about. And after a while, when I got to know most of the people at those meetings, then I came out openly and I told them everything that was needed. They wanted to know what was needed there in the community. And that's when I was talking about bilingual education for children there in Parlier, because there was no bilingual education. And Parlier is a small community, and a lot of the people that come out there every year to pick the crops come from Mexico or Texas and Arizona. And the children needed to learn how to speak English. They couldn't speak English, and they were going to school, and they didn't understand what was being said to them. So I became so involved that I became a teacher at night, you know. But this was, I had an adult class for farm workers.
Mm-hmm.
And
you taught English?
English and Spanish. I would talk to them in English and Spanish both, so that they would know what I was talking about. Mm-hmm. Because if I only spoke English, they wouldn't have known what I was talking about. So I did have a blackboard. I'd write something in English and then I'd write it in Spanish, mm-hmm. and the phonics underneath,
mm-hmm.
so they could read the English.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't do very much writing. They would just talk to each other and mm-hmm. to me. I'd ask them questions, and that they would answer. And sometimes they forgot the answer in Spanish. I said, no, I want you to answer in English. And it got to be pretty good. Mm-hmm. I even had a program, TV program on Channel 53 for mm-hmm. a few months. But then it got to be raining very hard, and I wasn't feeling very well, so I quit.
Mm-hmm. How long did you teach the class
about,
at the school?
About 8 months. But see, like I told him that, like the welfare department, there was something that they had to attend class in order to qualify for welfare. And many of them said they were going to night class, but they didn't understand what was being said in class, so they wanted to come to my class. And I had to fight the welfare department to give authorization for these people to attend my classes. Mm-hmm. And they started attending my classes, and they started, there was a lady there that didn't speak any English at all. She got, before I left, she could answer a lot of things in Spanish, and then we had to go to teacher's training every Saturday. And they gave me a box with a lot of material and some books for me to give out to the class. And in these books, there was one that said, "The Grandfather's Frog said quack." Oh my God, I thought, is this what I'm going to teach farm workers? Adult farm workers at that? And then that really got me angry. And I told him, I refuse to give this out. I refuse to teach this. We're not talking about children. We're talking about grown-ups who need to learn how to go look for a job and find out how much they're going to get paid and how to go buy a shirt and a part for their car or to the supermarket to buy groceries. We need to teach these people this in English, not the grandfather frogs that quack and all these sort of childish things. And so I was allowed to use my own material that I came up with.
So you devised some
Yes,
material.
I devised, you know, those little cardboard boxes where the penny hose come in?
Mm-hmm.
I cut little squares out of those, and I write the alphabet mm-hmm. on the squares, A, B, C, D. And I had many copies of A's and B's and all of these in a plastic bag. And I take it to the class with me, and I just dump them on top of the table. And they sat around the table, and I said, now you pick a bunch of these, each of you take one, and you know, arrange them to where it says, say something. You know, instead of writing, they used these. It was sort of a game.
Mm-hmm.
And they liked it, like a puzzle. Mm-hmm. They'd get these, and finally, one lady, she says, "Teacher, teacher." She used to call me teacher. Mm-hmm. She couldn't say teacher. Mm-hmm. "Teacher, teacher, I got it, I got it." And I said, "What?" And I went and looked at her, at what she had put together. She says, "I love my teacher."
Oh,
oh, I thought that was great. And this is how I taught this class.
Well, you brought to the attention of the group at the church the need for bilingual education.
Yes.
What were those meetings that you were referring to that you went to at the church? What kind of meetings were they?
I think people from the community.
Mm-hmm.
And there were teachers there too. And the priest.
Mm-hmm. So was this
about
something
six
the priest,
or eight of us?
The priest would organize?
Yes. And we would sit there and talk to each other and get to know each other. Mm-hmm. And after attending a few meetings, that's when I came out and told him what was needed out there in the community. And there was this young man who was not a priest. He was a reverend. And he says, we don't need bilingual education. He was Mexican-American.
Mm.
He was born in Texas. And he says, we don't need bilingual education. We need to teach them English. And I said, of course, but in order to teach them English, they have to know what you're talking about before they'll learn anything.
Mm-hmm.
So he was against bilingual education at first. Mm-hmm. After I talked to him a few times and I pointed out about, you know, when our grandparents came to this country, my grandmother never learned English, and she was here forever, I'd say, because she, you know, she didn't know somebody that could explain to her, you know, say something in English and then say it in Spanish, so they would know, so she would know what was being said. We weren't allowed to speak English at home because she didn't understand it.
Mm-hmm.
And since my grandmother raised me, she would say, "No, you can't speak English. I don't understand what you're saying." You know, she didn't encourage us to to learn English, but we did learn in school and with our friends. But it was hard. It was very hard. When I started school, I didn't start school till I was about 9 years old, not knowing a word of English. And it was very hard. And then changing schools so often, you know, I was scared. One of the teachers, when I first started school, there was a fight with a little girl, and she picked on me, and she went crying to the teacher, and I couldn't explain what had happened, so the teacher slapped me. And she got hold of my shoulders and shook me, and about two or three times something like that happened where I couldn't defend myself, and I got scared. I was very scared of teachers every time we moved.
So were your grandparents farm workers?
Yes. Mm-hmm. They came from Mexico, and they were farm workers. But we stayed in Anaheim. That's my grandfather had a house there. But after school was out, we would migrate up to San Jose to pick prunes. In October, we'd go back, pick cotton on the way back in October and part of November, and then go
in the
back.
The Fresno area?
Bakersfield and Fresno. Mm-hmm. Coming from San Jose, we'd stop in Mendota or Fireball, pick cotton and some in Bakersfield just to get enough money to get us back home.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'd stay there during the winter, and the following summer, we'd come back north.
Mm-hmm. So how long were you yourself doing that, traveling and working in the fields?
Oh, as far back as I can remember. I married in 1938, and we still went up north to pick prunes until 1967, I believe was the last, 67 or 68 was the last time we went up north. That's when I was in charge of the hiring hall in Parlier, and we became involved with the union.
Mm-hmm.
So I started working out here under a union contract, and there was no need for us to go following the crops.
Mm-hmm. So you started working under a union contract in grapes?
Yes, picking wine grapes for Christian Brothers.
In 67?
No, I was 67, I was in the office.
Mm-hmm.
And then 68 and 69 and 70, I believe it was, I worked under a union contract.
Let's see, when was it that you would have known Chuck McLean? Trying to think of when.
It must have been.
Later, I think.
Yes, later. Yeah. I really don't remember when I met him, but I know him.
Yeah.
But maybe that was through National.
He worked 1 year in the Selma office, the mm-hmm. Selma UFW mm-hmm. office.
Yes. That was after, when we moved to Fresno. My house was used as an office for mm-hmm. UFW. Mm-hmm. And after Fresno, they moved to Selma. They moved the office to mm-hmm. Selma. That's when he was there in the office in mm-hmm. Selma. I don't remember he was in Parlier, but I remember he was in Selma.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that was mm-hmm. the only office he maybe yes. worked in.
That must have been about 69, I'd say.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That could be, mm-hmm. yeah. Were you very aware of the work of the farm worker ministry in the States as a union member?
Yes, after I joined the union, yes, I was. I know
Chris Hartmeyer?
Yes, yeah. I know him very well. I've known him for many years, and I know that the church has been involved. If it hadn't been for the church, you know, we wouldn't have. We hadn't gotten the support of the church, which is the church people people who attended church heard about the union, and through all the paper that we had and all that, so we got a lot of support from it.
In the 60s. Chris wasn't even welcome in most Protestant churches up through the
yeah.
valley
mm-hmm.
because they were so angry at the ministry making you know this
yeah,
taking this position.
Yes,
and,
I remember that.
Do you remember that there was a lot of anger through the
yes.
valley churches
uh-huh.
about it?
Uh-huh.
Was that?
But that's what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. It wasn't the people that. People like me that would go to church, it mm-hmm. was people that had money, the ones that were angry,
mm-hmm.
the farmers
mm-hmm.
and their friends.
Mm-hmm.
But we needed the help.
So what you saw then was that in the churches, the farm workers who were members of churches were supportive of what was
yes.
happening, and the growers and their friends
uh-huh.
were opposed to
yes.
it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I understand that in Delano, for quite a while, there was not a Catholic pastor in Delano that would support what the union was doing
mm-hmm.
until the Franciscans came in.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So what do you remember about that? Do you recall?
I was not in Delano.
Yeah.
I was in Parlier.
Right.
And I would only go to Delano for the meetings. And like something happening, and we went to church, like Cesar's son got married there in church, and we went to a church, and we'd attend mass there sometimes when we happened to be there. But during Cesar's fast,
mm-hmm.
the priest was there, and many, you know, from all religions
mm-hmm. right.
were there.
Yeah. Okay. The churches in other places seem to have been more supportive than some of the church people in the San Joaquin Valley.
Yes,
who
yes.
were closer
uh-huh.
in to the situation.
Yes.
Did you feel like the main disagreement was not really a religious disagreement, but
was
just
not.
About money? Or
yes, it was.
How would you describe?
I would say that most of the farmers. Had to have but they had to have something to say against the union. So they were hitting the churches because the church was supporting the farm workers and the union.
Mm-hmm.
So they were even sometimes in the Fresno Bee, there's letters against something that the union got support before, you know, and they're always blasting these people away. So it's just something that happens, and what they're protecting is their pocketbook. Mm-hmm. I would say their billfolds. All they understand is money, and when they start losing money, that's when they start talking.
From your observation, especially since you got into cooperative farming yourself, do you think it's true that a lot of small farmers lost their farms during the boycotts?
No, that's not true. They're losing their farms because of the big corporate farmers who are buying them out, who are outselling them. You know, I was a small farmer. Mm-hmm. And we were the first, you never saw any cherry tomatoes here around Fresno before we started growing them. After we started growing cherry tomatoes and they saw how good we were doing, everybody started planting cherry tomatoes. Mm-hmm. And so these big growers could afford to sell a box of tomatoes for less money than we could. So they had mass production, they could sell for less. And we that didn't have very much couldn't afford to sell you know, at their prices, and this is what's happening all over. These big growers can sell for much less than the small farmer. But the small farmer didn't lose their ranch because of the union. Because the union was helping the small farmer, because we were in the same boat. Mm-hmm. You know, we're fighting the big corporations.
How about the small grape grower? Do you think that some of them were...
We had many
adversely affected by the boycott?
No, I don't think so. Even though they were made to think that it was the union that was doing this to them, but it was not. It was the people, the big corporate farmers, are the ones that own a lot of acreage. Because I heard many of the farmers, you know. We have friends who are farmers, mm-hmm. and we heard from them. We have friends who had... hundreds of acres, and we have friends who have just small acreage, and I could hear one of the big growers say, well, I don't want too much land, I just want my neighbors, which meant he was always trying to buy, he was always buying his neighbor out, mm-hmm. the small farmer, and he was getting bigger and bigger. The bigger he got, the more he wanted. You know, this is what's happening.
Tomorrow morning, I have an appointment to talk with Alan Grant. Do you remember Alan Grant?
Yes.
Did you ever hear him
I
speak?
I don't know him. Well, in the news sometimes I hear him, but he's another man that I heard a lot about, and I can say that he is. But I have a feeling that he was always trying to help his friends, mm-hmm. his farmer friends, not the small people. I don't think he was helping the small people, small farmers. But... that's how it goes. I guess that's why he was in the position he was. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What could he have done to have been useful to small farmers, do you think?
He could have come out with the truth. You know how everybody has the same rights, whether you're small or big, you have the same rights, but the smaller ones are always denied their rights. You know, even... the farm advisor, somebody by Long, what was it, Long or what was his name, here in Fresno, mm-hmm. he never gave out the news as we needed to hear them. Mm-hmm. So then we had a program for farm workers by Hope Lopez, who was on TV, and she'd tell the truth as it was, mm-hmm. you know, what was happening. Something that we never heard from the farm advisor, mm-hmm. or from the... you know, this program for it was directed mainly for big farmers, mm-hmm. and the truth was never heard. And just like now, all the radio programs, there's lots of news that we haven't heard about through the media, the radio, mm-hmm. but we have Radio Campesina, mm-hmm. so we hear everything that's happening right as it happened. Mm-hmm. You know, it's something that we don't hear over the radio. Mm-hmm. Hmm. But Radio Campesina, like all the contracts or the negotiating and those people that have died through pesticide poisonings and all that, you don't hear it on the radio
No.
or on TV. Mm-hmm. But we have the facts on these food injustice book mm-hmm. that comes out through the union.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, we hear those, too. But you never hear about that on, I don't know why, I guess, I don't know why they don't do it. Maybe they're afraid to speak out and tell the truth.
Mm-hmm. Probably the growers put a lot of money into
yes.
into the media.
Yeah, and everybody's afraid of them because they say, okay, we'll come out and say this, and then they'll take them, they won't give us a donation. Mm-hmm. I was elected to the Democratic Convention. Someone from TV came out. She called me first, and she said she wanted to come in and interview me. And she came to my house, and she saw, at that time I had a collection of buttons, which I still have, but I had it on that wall right there, mm-hmm. a big collection of buttons. And she came in, and she saw it, and she saw this black eagle all over the house, mm-hmm. Like it's out there on mm-hmm. the wall right there, and then mm-hmm. on my walls. And she started interviewing me about my trip to the Democratic Convention. There was a National Democratic Convention
what year was
in 72.
That? 72.
And I kept talking and talking, and she wanted to know, you know, what I'd been doing. I told her I was a farm worker, and I migrated up and down the state of California, and things hadn't looked up until I started working with the union, organizing people, I wasn't getting paid, but then when I worked under a union contract, my wages were better, and working conditions improved 100%, and I kept talking about the union. So she said, she kept writing everything, and she taped everything, and she went, she says, all right, she said, I have to talk to my boss about this, because I don't know if I can publish this, if it can come out in the Fresno Bee. So then she came back, she said, I'll come back a few days later. She said she would come back and finish the interview. So she came back, and she said, I had a hard time with my boss. He wouldn't allow me to put these on the press, I said, why not? You're talking about my life. You wanted to interview me about my life, about being a farm worker who is going to attend a national convention. So why can't you use it? She said, well, she finally gave in. He finally gave in. And he came out in the Fresno Bee, a whole page, you know. But she had a hard time. She said, well, if you don't let me write this about Jesse, I can't do it at all, because all she talks about is union and how things got better for farm workers through the union. So then she was allowed to do it. So I understand what they have to go through before they can. They're working people, and they have to know what,
you know, their jobs might be at stake.
Yes.
Depending on what they insist on writing. What do you see as the current situation for the union now? How do you see it?
It's been a very long struggle. And I'm old, but we have younger people who are working out in the fields, and they want to be represented by a union. They want to have someone to stand up for them. So now what I do, and many of us who started with the union, all we do is just support, mm-hmm. you know, but there's many young people who need to be represented by the union, especially right now with those pesticide poisonings and all that. For 20 years, we've been asking for many of these pesticides to be banned. Mm-hmm. I don't know why the government doesn't ban them. They keep producing them and selling them and poisoning people, not only farm workers but consumers, yet the government doesn't do anything about it. So what is it going to take? Something like that happened in India, where was it, a couple of years ago in India?
Bhopal, India.
Yeah. Do they want something like that to happen before they'll ban these pesticides? We're asking for a ban right now, not 10 years from now. We have children who are being born deformed. Mm-hmm. They're worried, and they're talking, many of these people are talking about birds being born deformed because of castors. Mm-hmm. But what about our children, the children that are born deformed because of the pesticides? Nobody talks about that, except us that have seen it and have gone through it, you know. So see, they wanted to hold the hearings in San Francisco. But where are the farm workers in San Francisco? Where will you find them? Farm workers can't afford to drive all the way to San Francisco to testify. So we finally got them to change it to Fresno. And we had people, we had lots of people, and I testified at that hearing. And I told him after, I was talking to these people that came in from Sacramento and Washington. I told him there's laws to protect animals from cruelty. But what about laws to protect farm workers from cruelty, being bent double all day out in the field? You know, we need protection for people also, not only for animals. But if somebody kills a dog, the whole city will be up in arms. You know, but if somebody dies because of poisoning, because mishandling pesticide, nobody's going to do anything about it. They try to keep it quiet. Even the doctors don't tell you. I know, because when I was in charge of the hiring hall there in Parlier, there was this man. I got a call from Delano. That's when where the main office was. Mm-hmm. And they asked me to find a man that they heard had been poisoned. It took about 10 days before I located him through other people, and he had been poisoned. I guess by now he doesn't leave, but the doctor never told him that he was poisoned. He just gave him some medicine, kept him overnight in the hospital in Kingsburg, and sent him home. But then when they heard about it in Delano, and they told me to look him up, I found out he had been spraying out in the field. And he fell from the tractor, and he had to crawl on his hands and knees for help. And that had happened about 4 months before when I talked to him. His eyes were watery. He couldn't sleep at night. He was trembling, you know, and he was vomiting most of the time. But he didn't know he had been poisoned.
Why wouldn't the doctors tell them?
Many of the doctors are farmers themselves.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes. Who can afford to be a doctor? People with money. So they're the ones. And then when you become a when they become doctors, they buy land as a tax write-off. Some lawyers do that too. This is why many of the farmers have their own lawyers at home. Their sons are lawyers.
So Marian Moses is really in a class by herself.
Yes.
As a doctor.
Oh, yes,
who
yes.
Also is very expert about mm-hmm. pesticides.
Yes, she studied. I think before she came a doctor, she was with the union.
Yeah, she was a nurse. I remember meeting her a long time ago.
I know,
ago.
She was taking care of Cesar when Cesar yeah. was sick.
Yeah, and in fact, if I remember right, I think that Marian decided to study to be a doctor just for this purpose.
Yes.
Because she was so concerned about the mm-hmm. pesticide mm-hmm. issue. Mm-hmm.
Yes, she's one exceptional lady.
Yeah,
yeah, she's... She's the one that takes care of the people there at La Paz.
Oh, she comes up from... Is she most of the time at Delano, or is she
yes.
most of the time up
at La Paz?
Oh, she's at La Paz.
Uh-huh. At La Paz, okay. And then she goes to Delano, she goes to Salinas, she goes everywhere where uh-huh. there's where the clinics are.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. But I think mostly she stays at La Paz.
Uh-huh. Well, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. About, it was a year ago, December... I was up in Delano, and some of us met with her, and she was talking about her work on pesticides.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't get the picture that she was traveling around a lot.
She does.
I didn't realize that.
She does. She goes to the clinic in Delano,
mm-hmm.
and you know the union has clinics in Salinas and other places, so
yeah.
she goes out there too.
Yeah, so she mm-hmm. circulates around.
Yes.
Working on you know other things besides pesticides, or she?
Yes, she. I think she. How could I say it? Looks after the farm workers there at La Paz, mm-hmm. or the volunteers. Whoever gets sick, that's the doctor. Mm-hmm. The doctor's right there.
Yeah.
So I know because Bobby was here. My son Bobby was here. He was telling me about how Marion examined him, and she told him that he better get on a strict diet without any oils or lard or anything like that, because he could have a stroke just like that.
Mm.
So now he's on a strict diet, and he's lost 10 pounds already.
Mm.
And
how
Bobby,
old is he?
He was born 1946. That would make him what, 40?
I guess, 40.
Yeah.
In May, he'll be 40 in May. I believe he's 40 years old. I still remember him as this kid.
Yes, he'll be 40 in May. And he told me that she checked everybody out there, and she says, if you're going to be working here for the union, you have to come in for a checkup. Bobby didn't want to be checked, you know. He says, no, why not? And she said, well, if you're going to work here, you have to come for a checkup. So he found out that his cholesterol or his blood, something was very high. And so he's on a strict diet right now. She gave him a month till the end of this month to find out if it's what he was eating, you know, his eating habits. And then after that, he's going to start exercising.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's good. Mm-hmm. Well, in terms of the church and the way the church and the farm worker movement sort of worked together, and but some of the church worked against, is there anything else you would especially want me to know, or any other observation you would especially want me to know about?
No, I can't think of anything except that, you know, we need to work together. We're talking about people, and we're talking about human justice, or what is it?
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of the word. But anyway, there's different races. People say there's different races, and they each try to keep separate. But we're only one human race.
Mm-hmm.
So why should we be separated? We have to work together in order to bring about the change that is needed. There, you hear so many bad things happening right now, worse than ever.
Mm-hmm.
And if we keep fighting each other instead of, you know, fighting together, where are we going to end? So that's my main concern.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's going to happen? What's happening? I see so many young people that need help. They can't get this help. There was a time when my kids were growing up, we lived in a labor camp. We couldn't move to the city. But then they tore down the labor camps because these big growers whom we worked for, which are the biggest landowners in the Westlands, said they couldn't afford to pay us higher wages, more than 75 cents an hour. So they chose to tear down the labor camps. And that put many of us out in the cities, on the very edges, on the ghettos, on the poorest sections of town. And everywhere you go, there's a part of town where these people are kept hidden.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want nobody to find out that there's this place where these people are, the poorest of the poor are right there. You'll see in the newspaper and TV, you'll hear about big park out there, about the mountains and about the, you know, the camping and all of these. But what about these people that were left out there, that are being kept hidden?
Like East Mendota.
Yeah. And here in Fresno, West Fresno.
West Fresno. Mm-hmm.
And everywhere you go, you'll find a section in that town that is, they don't want nobody to find out about that part of town. Yeah. And this happened. And what's happening to downtown? It's just disintegrating. Everybody's moving out. There was a time when West Fresno was alive with people and money because there were labor camps out there. People came in by the hundreds to pick cotton. Then machinery, mechanization took over. And where are these people? Where is the money that they
they would come into Fresno and buy clothes and stuff and things for them before they went home so the kids could go back to school. We'd come from these labor camps out there into Fresno to buy, do our grocery buying, our clothes and doctors and everything. We'd come all the way to Fresno. And that's
Why did you do that? Why did you come all the way into Fresno? Because from Mendota, you'd come all the way into Fresno?
Oh, we used to live in Huron.
Yeah,
Huron. Just a small town. Mm-hmm. And there wasn't very much to buy out there. Mm-hmm. Besides, prices were almost twice as high as it was worth it to drive all the way to Fresno. Three or five families would get in the truck and come all the way to Fresno, mm-hmm. do our buying, go to a show, you know, sort of a recreation, mm-hmm. a holiday, and buying at mm-hmm. the same time.
Yeah.
We're coming to a show maybe once or twice a month, mm-hmm. do our buying, and then go back. Mm-hmm. You know, and all these people, they're not there anymore. So West Fresno is dying, and so now it's downtown. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they're building and building, but they're building up north. Mm-hmm. You know, the city's moving out that way. Mm-hmm. And whose fault is it? Planning Commission, I planned them. They're talking about Fresno dying, about downtown. Mm-hmm. But the Planning Commission gave permission to these people to build out there and move out. So this is what's happening. Planning Commission and the City Council people and all of these there, they told him, okay, you go build out there. So they did, and now business is moving out. So what do you blame?
Are there still a lot of farm workers that come into town here to do their shopping and such?
Most of them, a lot of them do, but not very many anymore. Mm-hmm. Mainly because a lot of them are illegal aliens and they're afraid to come into town. Mm-hmm. They do their shopping in the small towns, mm-hmm. or they work for a labor contractor who has a store. He'll tell them, go buy out there, I'll give you credit, and you can pay me Saturday or Sunday, and then whatever money you have coming, I'll give it to you. So it's a sort of what you would call a company store. Mm-hmm. And that's where they do their buying. Mm-hmm. You know, unless there's some that you would call, a lot of people call them wild, mm-hmm. because they dare to come into Fresno to attend, go to a bar or a dance or something like that, and then they get into trouble, mm-hmm. mainly because others speak on them or try to rob them or something. Mm-hmm. You know, but
do you have many Central Americans in the area? Do you know?
Yes, I know there are some, but to me they look like Mexican, so you can't tell the difference, but I know quite a few of them.
The Guatemalan, yes. Indians. Uh-huh. Look,
I know a lot
a
of
little
them. I know
distinctive,
some.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I know some of them. Mm-hmm. Puerto Ricans and Guatemalans and from El Salvador. Mm-hmm. I've met quite a few of them.
Well, I thank you very much, Jesse. Mm-hmm. I really appreciate your taking time to do this.
Yeah, well, I hope I helped you.
Yes, you did.